We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, nearly recovered and ready for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. What a start to the season it has been. So we just recorded this episode with the one and only Chip Murphy of Knicks State of Mind Podcast. As we always do, we have him on to talk a little magic with the magic coming up because, as I say on the pod, he's the only person in the universe who follows both the Knicks and the Magic religiously. Great conversation. You'll enjoy this. I'm recording this introduction about 23 hours, 22 and a half hours after tip off of game one. And as I sit here and I still speak into this microphone, I still don't know what to make exactly of what we witnessed. All I do know is that I'm very happy they won that game because, man, would I not have wanted to live in the world that would have been left if they had not won that game. If you want to hear my thoughts about it, don't forget, if you haven't already, to check out the post-game live stream on your podcast feed, or if you want to go and watch it on YouTube, that's fine too. Had a lot of great conversation on that. We got a lot of great stuff in the chat, super chat. And I don't have a whole lot in terms of postmortem other than what I say on this episode. I will just say 1-0, baby. 1-0. And on that note, let's get to my very fun conversation with Chip Murphy. Joining me now on the Knicks Film School Podcast, I'm going to go with 6-time returning guest. That would be my, if you put a gun to my head and you said, how many times has Chip Murphy been on the Knicks Film School Podcast out of 400 and whatever episodes we're on? Maybe that's a little light. Maybe it might be 7 or 8. I have a feeling it's 7 or 8. In any case, I've already introduced him, but I'll keep introducing him because this is what I do. He is many things. He's the founder of the Couch Critic, new newsletter on Substack, which is very good. He's the co-host of the Knicks State of Mind podcast, and you can catch some of his writing at Knicks Fan TV, their site over there. My good friend, Chip Murphy. Hello, sir.
Thank you, John. That was the nicest part of the intro. I appreciate that. My good friend, I appreciate that.
We have to keep running. Like, I'm sure there are people who do this for like Saturday Night Live. If anybody's listening out there and wants to go back and like add up all the times that certain people have been on, Jeremy doesn't count because Jeremy is obviously co-host now. But like, I think it's either you or Fuddy. Fuddy, I think, probably has you by one or two, but it's close. It's close.
Yeah, I was. The first Magic episode was a long time ago. Now that I think about it, it was at least 2 years ago, probably, right?
Well, we could probably go back. I'm sure this is thrilling listening for everybody. I don't really care. We could probably go back and see when the Knicks played the Magic during the 2000, Andrew, help me out here, 1920 season? No, 18-19 season. That was the first year that we did the pod. 2018-19 season, I think. 1920, 2021. Yeah. So whenever they first played the Magic that year was probably the first time I had you on. So definitely qualify for OG status. Yeah.
I remember the first time I came on the podcast, I was kind of nervous. And now I just like have coffee here and I'm like, I'm just talking to John.
It's the difference between us. It's 5 p.m. You have a coffee. I have a beer. Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan Macri and Chip Murphy. We always do this. It's a annual tradition, semi-annual tradition. I don't know what it is. When the Knicks play the Magic, if there's an opening in the schedule, which there certainly was this week, we bring you on because you are the one person in the entire universe who follows two teams in the NBA much more than any other, and it is the Knicks and the Magic. So we're going to get some Magic talk in a bit. But first, again, I said it's 5 o'clock. We're recording this on a Thursday. I'm still like, if like the mental state that I am like 3 hours after a normal game, I'm in that mental place now, whatever it is, 18, 19 hours removed from the opener. Where are you at, Chip, after that game?
That was amazing. Yeah. I mean, just the whole thing, obviously Obi Toppin was so much fun to watch that, but just
ooh. Wait, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. The player on the Knicks.
We'll get to Obi Toppin. You can have your fun with Obi. But just, I mean, Evan Fournier, for me personally, I just love watching him play like that. And you just got the whole Evan Fournier experience. I was saying to myself in there, like the entire Fournier experience. I think you wrote in your newsletter, he missed 5 straight shots too in between.
In overtime and double overtime. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there was a turnover in there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And not even that, like I was rewatching the third and fourth quarters today and he referenced this actually in the post game, where he had a wide open, maybe it wasn't a proper corner three, but it was like just off the corner, wide open, bricked it. Obi gets the rebound, right back out to Fournier. Fournier, mm-hmm. without hesitation, fires it up again, bricks it again. Celtics go down. They score.
Yeah, but I mean, he had a one-track mind last night.
But how do you complain? He ended up, what was he, 6 for 13. So
yeah,
look, you'll take that every night. I like him a lot. I did not realize he was this good on defense. That's a thing that I've been sleeping on Evan Fournier.
You're not the only one. You're not the only one. Zach Lowe was too when the Knicks signed him. So everybody pretty much was. Yeah. I mean, people were calling him overrated. It was so weird. Like it's overpaid, overrated. I didn't get that at all.
But I guess that's, you know, maybe a good transition. We'll talk a little bit more about this game, but when you play in a place like where we've never done this, rank the NBA like witness protection cities.
Yeah.
I feel like Orlando has to be in the bottom five, right?
Mm-hmm.
With
definitely.
Andrew, can you chime in here? I'm curious to get, we should each on the spot. We're doing rankings. Here we go. The contenders are Orlando, Sacramento, Cleveland. If I'm offending anybody from any of these cities, I don't feel bad. I'm probably forgetting. Minnesota has to be on this list.
Indiana.
They've been good enough for long enough that I feel like they have earned
probably.
Like they're a basketball town.
Can I throw one in there that is a wild card, but as of recently, it's obviously changed, but would Brooklyn have been one before the KD, Kyrie, James Harden renaissance?
I feel like when they moved from Jersey, look, nobody hates the Nets more than me. I feel like once they moved from Jersey, they kind of escaped that.
Are you sure? Because I don't know a lot of people that were having like Caris LeVert, Joe Harris conversations until that first year when D'Lo showed up, made the All-Star team, and then they made the playoffs. You know,
no, that's fair.
In the same way that like Mitchell Robinson's stock gets inflated because he plays for the Knicks, Jared Allen's stock was on the low because people didn't know he also played in New York.
But people were having conversations about how nobody's having conversations about the Nets, even after they moved to Brooklyn, whereas nobody was having conversations about the fact that nobody's having conversations about the Magic or the Cavs or the Kings. Am I being too harsh?
That was inception there. Wow.
Yeah.
No, seriously, Chip, you have, we've heard the story before because you're a Dookie, you know, Redick, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you think this team gets like the proper amount of attention, or you just think they're off the map for a reason?
Orlando, I think they've gotten the proper amount of attention recently. Yeah, I think until they get good again, they're like every other small market team. They're going to get the proper amount of attention for a small market team, and that's none. Like when the Utah Jazz were terrible in that brief moment in between, you know, when they got Gordon Hayward, like no one talked about them. And now the only reason people talk about them is because they're good. And now, you know, in between when Denver got Melo and Jokic, there was a long time when you never heard anyone talk about the Denver Nuggets.
That's a good call. That's
a good
call.
Now they are right at the top every single day of everybody's topic list. You know, everybody wants to talk about the Nuggets. They're fun to watch. But when the thing about small market teams is you can be bad, but you can't be boring if you're a small market team and bad. You have to be bad and entertaining. And the Magic have always been bad and boring.
No, I would actually go so far as to say
they've been bad.
This year and last year aside. Before that, they were boring and like mediocre, which is maybe the worst place you could be in the NBA.
Yeah.
Is to be boring and mediocre. But no, but you know what? You're spot on, because people forget, like, even after when Shaq and Penny were there, it was the most paid attention to team in the league, but like, you know, almost got Duncan, Hill, McGrady, like that. Remember that when that trio almost happened. And then for the Dwight years. So yeah, no, it's a good call. Well, whatever it is, Fournier, I did not expect this from him. I'm wondering if he's going to be a guy that some Knicks fans love him, some Knicks fans hate him, or if everybody's just like, I'm going to invoke the name of your patron saint, J.R. Smith. Is he going to be like a J.R. Smith-esque figure?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he is. I think he's definitely going to be a guy that drives some fans insane sometimes, because there's going to be games where Mark Berman writes articles that's like, why is Evan Fournier taking more shots than R.J. Barrett? Yeah. And it's like, why is Evan Fournier 8-for-23 and R.J. Barrett only took 12 shots tonight? Yeah. And some fans are going to be like, you know what? That's a good point, Mark. Why did that happen? Like,
I was going to make a joke. I'm like,
that's just going to happen sometimes. And, you know, if Tibbs is always going to prefer a guy like Fournier, because you saw with Fournier's defense, I can't imagine how much Tibbs loved the way Fournier competed on that end. So he's always going to love a guy like Fournier.
I was getting no shit. I always do this. I'm always looking for an excuse to get the point guard off the floor. Why? I have no idea. But I'm like, maybe we run a switch everything lineup of Obi, Randall, Fournier, RJ. And like, I don't know. Could we throw Grimes in there? Grimes could.
He got the Frank minutes last night. The Frank seconds.
Frank milliseconds. It was literally a tenth of a second. For anybody who may have forgotten this like moment in the game, they inserted Grimes for defensive purposes with 6 point, whatever it was in the third quarter. I think it was third quarter. And then Fournier, speak of the devil, Fournier got a little too aggressive and fouled Brown as they were inbounding the ball to him. And I thought they were going to call an out of bounds foul for a second, which would have been two in the ball, I think. So that would have been a fucking disaster. But yeah, so congratulations to Quentin Grimes. Whatever. I like Fournier's ball handling. The only thing I hesitate in terms of fans ever really going against him is, like you say, he plays defense, he plays hard. If his shot profile stays the way it's one game. So, but if his shot profile stays the way it was after one game, I think we're all going to be pretty happy, because he was either at the rim or he was behind the arc. If he does that and he goes 8-for-23, it's like, all right, whatever. I don't really care.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. I think he had a tendency in Orlando to take bad shots, and I talked to you about this, I think, the last time I was on.
You did.
This always felt to me more like he was doing that because of the talent around him or the lack of us. This was especially after Vooch got traded. He just turned into a real chuck. And the the
between him and Terrence Ross, who had the title of like.
Oh, I love Terrence Ross, though. I really love Terrence Ross.
I wanted them to trade for Terrence Ross this summer.
Yeah, but no, I think Fournier is going to be a very interesting topic with Knicks Twitter, because there's going to be games when he plays like this, he's going to be able to win you games. And then there's going to be games when he's really off too. And he drove a lot of Magic fans crazy, but I think that was more because they wanted to see their team go with young guys last year.
Well,
and that's not the situation we have here.
Yeah. Well, not here. It's the situation they have obviously in Orlando still, but so this actually is, I'm going to be optimistic about this here. If like there's too much talent here for him to be able to pull that off. And like, obviously we don't know the interworkings and dynamic of the Knicks locker room, but I have to think like Fournier is not going to be the guy to take 20 plus shots if he doesn't have it going. To say nothing of the fact that I think Tibbs is going to trust Fournier. I think you already trust him probably as much as anyone on the team, not name Julius Randle and maybe RJ Barrett. But like, you know, I could see there being games where like, let's say Burks has it going. Let's say Emmanuel Quickley has it going. Like maybe Fournier, you know, isn't out there down the stretch. Would it shock you? Wouldn't shock me.
No, I wouldn't shock me if the only person who it would shock me wasn't out there down the stretch is Julius Randle.
Is right.
I think Tibbs is anybody else's fair game to get benched with.
Well,
Tibbs.
Good transition. Andrew, I'm going to require your services again.
Is this the part of the show where you get your flowers?
I don't want any flowers. I don't want any flowers because the first thing I will sit here and acknowledge, admit, make sure everybody's on the same page about, the Knicks were not down one center yesterday in their opener. They were down two centers. And if lest anybody think that we would have seen what we saw if either Nerlens Noel or Taj Gibson had been healthy, I feel like I'd be talking out of my ass if I said that. What do you guys think? Do you think he would have gone to that if either of those guys have been healthy? Chip?
No. I don't think he ever would have played with Julius if those guys were healthy. Just based on, you know, just based on his entire coaching career.
The entire emphasis of my pushback to the notion that Obi would play the five or play with Randle stems from an entire season of seeing number six play and consistently hurt this team, but it made Tom feel comfortable. He had to go to an uncomfortable place last night, which was put a non-traditional center on the floor. And what I'm hoping is that the 2021 mind that's on his staff shows him, hey, it worked, and that they go to it more often. However, the pecking order remains. He's got three guys ahead of him in the depth chart at center as far as Obi Toppin goes. So we'll see when, like you guys said, when this roster is healthy, we'll see if it actually happens.
So we should also say that, again, to be very clear, and A, Andrew, this is not revisionist history. You've always been very clear about your reasons for doubting the Obi Toppin explosion.
I didn't doubt the explosion.
I agree with him, so I feel the need to come to his defense.
We all want to see it. It's a Tibbs thing.
I'm agreeing. I'm just saying the reason you were trepidatious had nothing to do with Toppin himself. We should also point out that Tibbs went to a guy who some people thought was not going to be drafted and ended up going 58th. You went with him in the first half.
Like he went to Jericho Sims
first. When that happened, I was like, oh my God, he's really doing this.
So John does his halftime Zoom for the newsletter. And apparently so there's a lot of backstory here, but I'll explain it. So apparently John at the halftime Zoom for all the newsletter paid subscribers said he's disappointed in Tibbs for not going to And that's, we did a bold predictions pod with the Locked On Knicks guys this weekend.
Oh, stop.
And I didn't get to make mine. I didn't get to make mine, Chip. My bold prediction for this season is that by the end of the year, John will turn on Tom Thibodeau.
Never.
Wow. John will turn on Tibbs because he'll be so frustrated that we're seeing Nerlens and Taj. Well, not Taj, but see, that's where the argument falls apart, because if it means more Taj minutes, then it's going to be okay. Obi played 12 minutes and we're stuck behind three centers when you saw it works when they go small. John will, it's already festering because he's got the campaign for Obi out there.
Yeah, we just did a prediction on our pod for Obi's minutes, and I think me and Danny both landed at like 12 or 11 or something. 12 or 13, something like that.
It's not going to be 12 or 13. Yeah. I tell you right now, it can't be 12 or 13. It absolutely cannot be 12 or 13. That it's just, as an average, it can't be that low, because he's going to get time in there will be garbage time. There will be games Julius is in foul trouble. There may be games Julius Randle misses. Like, the average is going to be higher than that. I think where you're probably with the 12 or 13 is, like, so all things being equal, Julius is healthy, the centers are there, it's a close game. Are we going to see Obi for as few as 12 or 13 minutes, which would mean that Julius Randle is playing, do some quick math in my head, 35 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, about what we would expect, give or take a minute or two. So if you want to get higher than 13, 14 minutes, you have to play the two of them together. Here's the only thing I'll say in my defense, and this is why I think, again, I'm staying on this hill. I will die on this hill. There was no reason to know if you're Tom Thibodeau. There was reason to hope. There was no reason to know that alignment was going to work last season, because Obi Toppin was a rookie, and quite frankly, he was bad. He was very bad for stretches at a time. And we were always like, well, if he played him more, maybe he wouldn't be him so bad. That conversation has changed now, because now it's like, oh, wait, no, he's not bad anymore. He's good. He's good at both ends. He could do stuff. I just wonder how that changes the equation, especially when, and I don't want to turn this into I'm going to shit on Noel fest. When the other guy that is, you have there, Nerlens, like, you know, he is what he is. He's a very good backup center. That's it. Right. Like, if that's the alternative, then what, you know, maybe we can find those extra 5 minutes a game. That's all I'm saying.
What is Obi then? If Nerlens is a backup center, what's Obi?
What I love about him is, much like Julius Randle, I'm not sure he fits into any box. Like, watching him play, like, it's like we keep saying, like, Julius Randle plays more like a wing than a forward. I kind of feel the same way about Obi Toppin. The way he moves, the way he, like, glides around the court. I mean, obviously his athleticism and the fact that he throws down these dunks is incredible, but
can I ask another hypothetical for you guys? Cause we always need a scapegoat as New York sports fans. Just go to literally any team. We need a scapegoat. So there's been a lot of talk about how there's no scapegoat on this team. Is Noel a sneaky candidate for that? Chip, there were stretches last year. They put him in the same conversation as number six.
Yeah, it could be. I was honestly a little concerned that Fournier was going to be a sneaky scapegoat taking shots away from RJ. People rushing to that possibility just because I'm such a big fan of Fournier's. I'm a little concerned about that being a possibility. But yeah, Noel's a possibility. What if he bumps Mitch out of the starting lineup or something wild like that? I don't see it happening. I'm not saying that. I think that would be, especially after what we saw last night. Mitch is clearly back to form.
Talk about burying the lead. Yeah, Mitch is good.
Yeah, he looked amazing. That's the best he's ever looked, I think. As good as he's ever looked.
There was a play, I put it in the newsletter today, where it's not that getting an offensive rebound over Jason Tatum is that impressive. Jason Tatum's whatever he is. He's 6'8", 6'9". But he just like moved him like he was a ragdoll. Yeah, he entered his space.
Tatum's strong too.
I know. That's the thing. Tatum may look a little slight. He's muscular, and Robinson moved him out of the way like it wasn't there. I think it'll be Noel because my point, I wrote about this, I think it was last week or maybe earlier this week, is that he depends so much on those splash plays, and he had an opportunity to make so many splash plays last year because Mitch wasn't there. So it was like, you leave him in there for long enough, he's going to have those stretches where he gets you those like huge momentum shifting blocks or, you know, he swipes it around for a steal. But on offense, like, he's a breaking case. I think for a contender, if he was on a contending roster, I think Nerlens Noel's a guy, a breaking case of emergency, play him 10, 15 minutes here and there if you have to. That's what I think he is. We're not a contending roster, but that's a position of strength. So we'll see. Anything else we should cover for last? I still, again, last night's game is still so fresh in my mind. What do you think?
Unless you want to talk about Kemba, but I don't really want to talk about it. Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I don't.
You sure you don't want to talk about it?
I was in the mood to listen to something about the Knicks for my very short walk home. And I turned on, I saw the Athletics Daily Ding had they headlined, you know, or led off with the Knicks game. And I had to laugh. They're like, maybe Kemba forgot which team he was on at the end of the game.
That's funny.
I went back and watched it today. None of them are good. None of the turnovers are good. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there was another one with like, I want to say two and a half minutes left of pass that like was very close to getting picked off. That would have been four. And then the last play of the game of regulation, I should say, obviously. Can we just sweep it under the rug? Can we just move on and hope it never happens
one.
Again?
Game one. And thank God we won that game. Oh my God. What a terrible loss it would have been. Whatever. We won. It's over.
We're moving. I'm making executive decisions as the host of the show. We're moving on.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Knicks basketball is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet for Knicks tickets anymore, because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NBA tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that all other sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all their NBA tickets. Don't believe it? If you could find better prices for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. When the Knicks schedule came out, there are definitely certain dates we all circled on the calendar. October 20th against the Celtics, Christmas Day against the Hawks, January 12th against the Mavericks, even April 6th against Brooklyn. Whether on the road or in the garden, TickPick has you covered. Visit TickPick.com/filmschool today to save $10 on your first order of Knicks tickets. That's TickPick.com/filmschool to save $10 on your first order of Knicks tickets today.
Good transition to the Magic. What do you think the... Because I said this on the pod, my fear was that they would lose the Celtics game and then be a little unnerved and or shaky or whatever, and then maybe drop one of the Magic games. After the way they won that game, I'm not sure what the carryover is going to be to Orlando. Chip, do you have a gut feeling? Because I don't. I don't have a good feel.
I think Orlando has no idea who they are yet, just because they're missing so many people. Yeah, they just got spanked by the Spurs.
I'm looking at the box score, 123-97. Yeah. Granted, it was in San Antonio.
Yes, but I watched most of that game, and they got significant first quarter minutes out of Iggy Brazdeikis in that game.
You should have told me not to take a sip from my drink before.
Yeah,
you
said that's how injury. That's how banged up they are. You know, Jalen Suggs started. He wasn't supposed to. They're missing Gary Harris too. There, who was actually really good for them after they traded for him. And obviously Fultz and Isaac aren't back yet. There's still no timetable for them on when they're coming back, which they haven't really talked about that at all, which is concerning. I mean, they just paid both of those guys. And I mean, the Fultz, Suggs, Anthony thing, they need to figure that out. But I don't think the Knicks should be worried about them right now. I think it's going to be fun to watch them. It could definitely be fun to watch Suggs and Cole and Mo Bamba, man. Mo Bamba's been fun to watch so far, preseason and regular season. He looked great again against the Spurs.
So I'm going to... I was about to say, so the one guy that you could say had a really nice... Well, no, Russ, other than being minus 32, which I don't know how much we should make out of that. Russ was 5 for 10 for 15 points. But Mo Bamba was 27 minutes, 6 for 8, 18 points. Only 4 rebounds, which is a little concerning for a man who's 7 foot, size. Whatever he is.
But he also had Trae Young block his shot and take the ball right out of his hand. So
was it?
He's come a long way from that.
Bamba doesn't have the longest wingspan in combine history, but I think he was close, right?
Did someone beat it? Because he did when he went to the combine.
Yeah. Okay.
Someone may have beat it since he was there.
Well, 4 rebounds is not really what you want. No, started again against the Spurs. They started Bamba and Carter, Wendell Carter Jr.
Yes, they went big. And Wagner was the 3. It was like that Cavs Markkanen lineup. It was wild.
I was about to say, Wendell Carter Jr. has experience playing in super big lineups from his days in Chicago. So it's probably what. So they went with the 2 of them. Carter had a decent game, too. I'm just looking. He was 5 for 10, 13 points. Yeah. Franz Wagner, their rookie, he was whatever he was, the 9th pick in the draft.
He looked good.
6 for 9. Now here's the not so good. The aforementioned Iggy Brazdeikis. Sorry, Iggy. 2 points, 1 of 6 from the field, 0 of 3 from deep. And then Cole Anthony and Jalen Suggs combined 6 for 26. Again, not really what you want from your starting backcourt. And then this is hysterical. I had no idea that Mo Wagner, Franz Wagner's brother, was even on this team.
Yes,
they got both from Wagner brothers. How great is that?
And I love they have Robin Lopez too. Can't wait for Robin Lopez.
And of course, RJ Hampton, who is, I guess, still intriguing, although he was 2 for 8 as well. So look, you said it. This team is bad. And they are maybe very, very bad. Can they beat a team like the Knicks? I can't believe I'm asking that question, but no, can they beat a team like the Knicks?
Not this early in the year before they have any idea what they're doing yet. Yeah. And they just have no shooting, like no shooting at all. I just don't see how I think the only way for them to get lucky and beat a team significantly better than the Knicks is shooting. Right. And who's going to get hot for them? Like last night, their best 3-point shooter was Bamba. And
I'm just lucky he was 3 for 4.
Yeah.
That's great.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Terrence Ross didn't really do a lot of damage from outside. So, and you know, they really, with Ross and Bamba, are their only really perimeter threats right now. So
Ross has killed us in the past.
You do have to worry about that.
I was about to say, if Ross comes out one of these nights and goes like 7 for 12 from downtown, and this is a game in the fourth quarter because of Terrence Ross, I would be like, come on. But I don't, you know what? Maybe I worried a little bit too much because I don't, looking at this lineup, I just, as long as the Knicks have energy, I wonder if that's going to be a factor. I wonder if the Knicks are going to be a little tired. Because they played this game on Friday night. I believe the game is in Orlando. I'm pretty sure the game is in Orlando. Mm-hmm. Because it would be weird if it's in Orlando. Okay.
Yeah, it's in Orlando. They played the first game in San Antonio.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, so they got to travel a little bit. Maybe that's something I don't want this to be a game. I want this to be over at halftime or in the second quarter or whenever, you know?
They're catching them they're so much better than Orlando, and they're catching them. They're missing everybody. I mean, they don't have, it's not just Fultz and Isaac. They don't have Harris. They don't have MCW. They don't have Chuma.
Oh my God. I forgot. One of Zach Lowe's, one of Zach Lowe's 5 most intriguing preseason players. Take a shot. Can we talk about Isaac for a second?
Sure. Basketball or non-basketball?
Basketball.
Okay.
I love Andrew making that gesture. Thank you, Andrew.
Making sure where we were going was not where we were potentially going. That's all I was saying.
Listen, man, I had a long day. I just want to come home and talk basketball.
Let's talk about Jonathan Isaac, the basketball player. I'm game.
There are some regrettable Kyrie takes I have.
You know? Yeah.
From a long time ago.
But that's why I wanted to bring him up, because you were, I don't know if you were higher on Isaac than anybody I know, but you watched him, and I feel like you came at your opinion, which was, correct me if I'm wrong, very high of him, yeah, from an informed position. I thought he signed for 4 for $80, and I was looking at it the other day. It's only 4 for $69, mm-hmm, I think. Right. Which is like, it's on one hand, he signed that contract coming off a torn ACL or whatever. I think it was an ACL, right? And, you know, like he's a guy, obviously, that depends on his athleticism. And this was not his first major injury. So there's all that out there. But at the same time, it's like, you look at what guys around the league are signing for. And this is the Magic in the state that they're currently in. You know, you want to talk about a situation where if ever there was going to be, you have to pay a little bit more to keep the guy, right? Because exactly, he's staying here. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at that contract and I'm like, I know we haven't seen the guy in however long, but like, I still like that contract.
Yeah, I think it's a good contract. I mean, I think my first reaction is, you're the Orlando Magic. What else are you going to spend the money on? What other player? Like, you're going to spend it on some big free agent signing that you're going to get. Like, yeah, you have a guy who wants to be there, who's a Florida guy,
yeah,
who is willing to commit to your franchise. You sign him. It's the same reason you signed Fultz. Fultz was, yeah, loyal to you because the Sixers treated him like garbage, and you guys were willing to just give him the keys on day one. And he was like, yeah, I'll re-sign with you right now. Then yeah, you re-sign him because the guy's got serious talent. And like Isaac, he's on a reasonable contract that's tradable. So they were both good signings. I agree with you.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what they look like. I loved, and I have not watched as much of this person as I would have liked to over the years when he was in Chicago, but the Carter contract felt like a good contract too. 4 for $50, yeah, for a guy that was like, just like, felt like every basketball nerd loved Wendell Carter Jr. coming out of Duke, like early on, and then his career just kind of went sideways. But like, look at everybody on that Bulls. I don't know. Can we really judge anything from what the Bulls have done the last few years? I don't really know. So I'm curious to see what he looks like. If they go with this Bamba Carter Jr. lineup against the Knicks,
I think they're going to play it by ear with the starting lineup, is my gut feeling. I think they went with the Bamba Carter Jr. thing because San Antonio went with Portal. So they wanted to go Portal, okay, and McDermott. So I think they wanted to go big to match up there, I guess. But
sure, why not?
Maybe they'll go with matchups. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I honestly, like I said at the top, I don't think they have any idea what they're doing yet. They have so many injuries. I just don't think they have their... I think once he comes back and is healthy, I think Chuma will probably start.
Yeah, well, I mean, everybody's really
before Isaac him, comes so. Back, obviously.
Oh yeah, no, sure.
Yeah.
So, all right, this has made me feel a lot better. I needed this, Chip. I needed this from you, yes, today to, yeah, reassure me that, like, after what we saw in game one with some uncertainties about the Knicks, that they're going to be able to probably take care of business. And then, I mean, fuck it, let's just finish up with this. Then the Knicks play Philly.
Oh, good.
And in New York. Now, Philly looked very good in their opening night win against New Orleans, but I think New Orleans might be, I mean, man, oof. Talk about a situation that is not too great right now.
Oh, what a shock. David Griffin's not doing a good job. He's, yeah.
I would have never have guessed it. I feel like we have to, we're contractually obligated as a podcast that is about the NBA to mention Simmons. Did you see what Daryl Morey tweeted before?
No, I didn't. What?
Or excuse me. No, sorry. Not that what he tweeted before, what he, what he said before at a press conference. You want to talk about, no, not beating around the bush. So this is Daryl Morey on his timeline. You're going to think I'm kidding. I'm not. This could go on for 4 years. We're in the prime of Joel's career. Either Ben Simmons is playing for us or we have to get back a difference maker.
Just want to jump in and give real quick. I just want to jump in. This was on 97.5, the Fanatic. Oh, he actually went on their afternoon drive show. And
the
quote he said?
Was it a regular appearance or he was like, I'm going to go on this show to talk about this?
I think it was literally just an I'm going to go on the show to talk about this. I don't think the GM has a regularly scheduled spot, but similar to how Cashman will go on the Fan all the time. If there's something to talk about, clearly the Sixers have something to talk about. I'll do some digging to see if what the specifics are of it, though.
Except Cashman just makes stuff up when he goes on.
Oh, that's a whole other bag of worms. Believe me, every Yankee fan in my life is annoyed that their standards are now just don't be the Mets.
Oh, you know? God. We don't need to go down that disgusted by the fact that both those guys still have a job. Sorry, John. Yeah.
However, to the Ben Simmons point, yes, the direct quote, as John just said, is that this Daryl Morey's not budging if he doesn't get a difference maker back.
And then there's an added part of this. People should buckle in. This is going to go a long time. I guess I just like. So let me be clear. I don't think this is going to affect the Sixers that much, other than they're going to have one less like good basketball player because Simmons is going to be on the roster and he's not going to be in the game. And like, I know Shake Milton is, I think he's still hurt. He was out. It didn't sound like he was coming back anytime soon. So, you know, it's a lot of Tyrese Maxey, who is very talented, but he's also young. So what do you make of that? I don't know. I don't necessarily think this is going to be the distraction to the team that maybe some people think it will be. What are your thoughts on this? I'm curious.
I don't think it is. Joel Embiid said he didn't care about Ben Simmons.
I don't care about that man.
I don't think the team gives a crap about Ben Simmons. I think they've moved on pretty much. It sounds like they've moved on, but I think the Sixers just need to get a new guy in there. His trade value, they totally mismanaged that.
And I was thinking about this when you brought up Fultz, because so far the story on Fultz that has been written is something happened with him. He broke his shot, or he with whatever, you know, for anybody who hasn't read Yaron Weitzman's book, it's a great book, Tanking to the Top. It's all in there about some work he did with a trainer that was his personal trainer and it went sideways, whatever. But it's been looked at as like more of a Fultz thing than a Sixers thing. And from the Sixers perspective, from the Sixers side of it, it's been looked at as like, boy, they fucked up taking Fultz and not taking Tatum. The way the Simmons thing continues to play out, I wonder if it's going to more be like this organization just doesn't know what they're doing. And they looked into Joel Embiid, and Joel Embiid is that good that he's like, you know, and you could even look at some other stuff, the Horford contract, you know, I don't know, man.
Simmons over Butler.
Picking Ben Simmons over Jimmy. Yeah. Like they did essentially pick Ben Simmons over Jimmy Butler. That's wild when you put it like that now.
Yeah.
But at the time, I'm sure some people may have said it, but I was like, I didn't think that was like egregious.
I think Joel Embiid probably did. Just based on what he thinks of Jimmy Butler. Joel Embiid loves Jimmy Butler, right? I think he would have preferred Jimmy Butler, yeah.
I mean, if you were a basketball player, who'd you rather play with, Ben Simmons or Jimmy fucking Butler?
Yeah.
You know? So whatever. By the way, Maxey in game one. Maxey had 20 points in game one. Wow. That's okay. Well, 20 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 8 of 14 from the field, 2 of 3 from deep. Hell of a game.
It's why the actual conversation around the Sixers and Ben Simmons is Knicks related, because Patrick Ewing played for the Knicks. And there may be a hint of Ewing theory here that addition by subtraction is actually the best case scenario for the 76ers.
I can't believe you just put Ben Simmons in. I know you didn't put Ben Simmons in the same sentence.
No, just Ewing theory is where I'm going with this. Yeah. If you want to call it the Bryce Harper theory, fine. They might have gotten better by the fact that one guy that's considered one of their best players is not there. And now everybody can fall into their role. It opened up the path for Tyrese Maxey to play more minutes. And as we saw last night, it might have actually benefited them. Like, we'll see long run if like it actually means they go further in the playoffs, but I don't know. I think the team's kind of adopted this philosophy of like, well, forget that guy. Like, that's a very Philly thing too.
It is very Philly.
They're just Boston, but South, you know?
Yeah. And Embiid is very Philly. My brother lives in Philly. He says he sees Embiid walking around. Like, really? he just walks around in Philly. Yeah. Like,
that's awesome. There.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I don't get. And I'm sure there's an obvious answer to this question. I don't know what it is. Daryl is insisting on, we need to get a difference making player. Okay. We know what Daryl means by that, right? That if Ben Simmons continues to not play, his value will not go up. If he comes back and plays, it can't just be he's on the court, like going through the motions. He needs to look like a better version of himself than he was, honestly, probably at most points last year. Because last year, forget the playoffs. He was like, he had an up and down season. So you're now asking this guy to become like the best version of himself to increase his, like, what? How is that going to happen? It's not going to happen. So like, what's the end game here?
I guess for some team to do something stupid, or maybe they're waiting out a team to get desperate.
I guess
during the season.
That's the only answer, right? Like, yeah, I mean,
is Portland the team? Maybe Portland.
Look, man, if saying that out loud, the notion that they could get Damian Lillard.
No, not Dame.
Oh, I think that trade would have happened already if Morey wanted to do it. That's my gut feeling. I don't know.
I guess.
I don't know. Maybe they're waiting for Sacramento to start out badly. I don't know. What do you think, Andrew? I see a look on your face.
No, I just think this goes back to last season. Morey's kicking himself. They didn't pull the Harden trigger. But as a result, now you then can't get a player worse than James Harden. And like, he can recalibrate the value of Ben Simmons going forward, but I don't think he'll, as you mentioned in the interview, he's not going to, like, CJ McCollum isn't enough. Whatever the Kings would offer that isn't De'Aaron Fox isn't enough. Whatever the Timberwolves are going to offer that isn't Cat or Wiggins or apparently D'Lo isn't enough. Ben Simmons, and that's, I think, the bigger question here that you guys hinted at. We're talking about Fultz. Fultz went to Orlando and you saw what happened when he was playing in the correct role. But in Philly, he was drafted to be the savior. And I think Philly has an over-evaluation of their players problem. Ben Simmons is meant to be Draymond. He's not meant to be anything more than that.
But is he willing to do that, though?
It's a good question, which is why he's talked about it a little bit in his leaks to Shams, that he kind of needs to go to a place to clear his head. He needs to go to a place and lose a lot, but settle into the NBA player he's going to be, you know? And the overall thing about this that's Knicks related is that I'm just so glad it's not happening to us.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. We've had these moments. We've been the lead story on First Take.
We had
De Blasio. We had Cuomo. It was sucked for a while, but now we have the Knicks.
Thank you I was going to forget the real video. Great viral video by
greatest video of all time. But Sidewalk New York City.
Sidewalk. Yes. I mean, Jesus, I'm trying to think of how Knicks fans would react if the Simmons thing was happening here. I'm probably about as the same as Philly fans are reacting, which I imagine is not too well.
Well, theoretically it could have, if they hadn't traded Porzingis as fast as they did, right? If they had let that linger.
It's a what if nobody asks, because who the fuck wants to think about it? But what if they, like, what if it actually happened the way they said, but without the part about them like angling to trade him for a while before that, because that was they were looking to get rid of this guy, and as it turns out, as they should have. But like, what if it actually went down like we were blindsided? He walked in and he said he wanted to leave, and we said no, and it they took it to restrict the free agency. Like, how would that have worked out? I don't know.
I think calling is bluff. Yeah, it's such a risk with, but he's at the end of the day, was he really worth it?
No, he was not.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, and you know, kudos to Scott Perry and Steve Mills for realizing he was not worth it. So good job by them.
And I think to John's point, literally just do the hypothetical if it happens a year later that they've already extended him, like the Mavericks did the next offseason. Then he walks in and is like, I want to be traded. And the Knicks are like, you're under contract. Like, I'm sorry. You are the franchise cornerstone, which is the situation the Sixers find themselves in.
Yeah. Well, not really though, because the Knicks, I would assume would be bad, or I'm assuming would be bad in that scenario. Also true.
Yes. But as far as the player relationship and value is concerned,
which is what makes this such a, I think Lowe said it on his podcast the other day, or someone of his guests said it on the podcast the other day about, actually, it might've been Windy. I forget where I hear things. Those are the two basketball podcasts I listen to, where it's like, when has this ever happened before where a star, quote unquote, star player is demanding a trade off of a contender? It's so unprecedented, because usually if a star player demands a trade, it's on a crappy team and you get draft picks, and like, you'll find a team willing to give you a bunch of picks for the player. Like, what I think you nailed is that Morey is counting on some shitty team for their season to start to go sideways, and them looking at them in the mirror and be like, wow, my boss is going to fire me. I'm not going to be able to like make this team's next draft pick. Who cares that we're losing all these games? And then be like, oh, I know what I could do. I could trade for Ben Simmons. But again, that team would need to have a certain type of player, which is why I mean, how many teams do you put in that guy? I mean, it's Sacramento with De'Aaron Fox. It's who else?
I mean, Minnesota, D'Lo is the trade, right?
Yeah, but they're not. But I got to think that trade, if they knew that they could get Simmons for D'Lo, don't you think they would have already done it?
I guess. Yeah. Probably. But it's not like they're going to trade Cat for him.
That's what I'm saying. They're not going to trade Cat for him. They're not going to trade Edwards for him. So that's why I don't even know that maybe my daughter just agreed. I don't even know if they're like a team that should qualify for this conversation. It's hard to figure out, you know, maybe, you know, this is a good place to end. Andrew, maybe your boy Colin Sexton blows up. And that's
there you go.
Love Colin Sexton.
As far as I'm concerned, he's already blown up. You know, as Jeremy pointed out in the cap or no cap, he's a winning player on a losing team. So I will go off the brain and intelligence of my other old partner in crime, Jeremy Cohen, on that one. Yes. Let's talk about sex, baby. Okay.
Here's what's going to happen. Markel Fultz is going to come back and look like an all NBA player. And then they're going to trade Simmons for Fultz.
Oh my gosh. I'm rooting for that now.
That's the end game here.
100%. Although the all time funnier part, Chip, is if they trade, the Cavs do trade for Simmons, and then they run a lineup out there of Simmons, Markkanen, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, and like Kevin Love.
God.
All of these guys are above 6'10", and that's going to be our starting lineup. That's the next evolution of the NBA.
The all misery lineup with Simmons and Kevin Love.
Oh, yeah. The all misery team.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's great. Funny.
Go ahead.
What? No, they traded away Larry Nance Jr., who's like the one guy in the history of the league who's like, I want to play. My dad's like, they sent them fucking packing. You can't write this shit. Oh, man.
It's fun to laugh at other franchises now, isn't it?
Oh, God.
And we're like, our stress is like, was it last night's win really?
Yeah.
Like, stressful, guys? Wow. Can I ask a podcast hypothetical for you guys?
Sure.
Where does that rank? It's super recency bias, but I was trying to think of the last time a regular season win made me feel those emotions. Was that like the most stress inducing regular season win since blank?
Wow.
Because I don't have one from last season. Last season felt from the beginning to end so much house money that I had no real expectations. I was just happy to be there. Last night, like John and I have talked about this little off mic, Chip, that there actually did feel like there was something riding. Because say they lose that game, then they split with Orlando. Now you're 1-2 going into with the Philly coming in and actual like good opponents coming in the schedule. So getting that win felt like must win. Like it was important for building momentum going forward. And I just
beat a playoff team.
Right. Yeah. So as a division rival. So as a result, where does last night's win rank for you guys in recent memory for regular season wins?
I'll say, look, I think I could say this with some modicum of confidence. It's number one. It's number one because it I'm not saying it's the biggest regular season win they've ever had. I just want to be clear about that. But the way you phrased the question was like a regular season win that made you feel like that and go through those emotions. Because while there have been games with batshit crazy stuff that has happened that they've pulled out, I don't know of another game that had the stakes that one did. And that's pretty easy for me to say because there hasn't been a lot of games over the last 20 years that have had much stakes. If you go back to the 12-13 season, which is where my mind immediately goes to, like they started 6-0.
Yeah.
So, and then it was a bumpy ride from there, but there was never a moment during that 12-13 season where like there were crazy games. Like the Thunder game was a crazy game, but there was never a moment during that season where you're like, shit, they really need to win this game. Otherwise this thing's really going to go sideways.
The Kurt Thomas game is the only one I could think of. And even
when Melo broke the scoring record was a great one.
That's an individual moment during a lost season though, you know?
But yeah, exactly.
It didn't have, I didn't care what the score was. I was just,
emotionally, like that was one of the few that I've been tapped into like this one.
Well, it's funny you bring up Melo because I'm with John and going back to 12-13 was the next closest. Like last season, I think the Memphis game is maybe the closest we got because it turned around. That would have been four straight losses. It was a moment for RJ. Yep. And then it started the winning streak. However, I had to go back to 12-13 and say, like, did I have a regular season moment that year that wasn't like a collective, this is great, but there's playoff expectations. So I actually either went back to Melo against the Bulls, that Easter Sunday game, which to an extent for those of us in Melo camp that were like, this justifies all of Melo, or to bring John back into the conversation, Jeremy Lin.
I'm just getting shrapnel left and right here.
Which is funny because this should have been your victory lap with Obi today.
Fuck the show.
The Jeremy Lin game against Kobe, which that felt like, okay, maybe this might be a thing. Maybe we did find a point guard. Oh,
that's a great call. Linsanity. Yeah. That's a great call, Andrew.
That's the legit euphoria I felt with last night's win, at least, that you pulled out one of those games you shouldn't have won. So, that they don't win in the past, you know?
So I should know these by heart, but I think it might have been the first Linsanity win because that season, the expectations for that 2011-12 season were really freaking high because it was now the first season with Melo and they had gotten obviously Chandler and it was just like this thing like, oh, we'll figure out the point guard position. Well, guess what? No, you didn't figure out the point guard position. They started out 8 and whatever the hell, 14, 15, 16. It was abysmal. And it was, you're right. There was that moment where it's like, wow, we're going to go back to the dark ages again if we don't win a game here very soon. And then Linsanity happened. And that's a great call.
Yeah. And then because it went the Nets, which are still New Jersey, was the first game of Linsanity. He came off the bench. Then it went Utah. Then it went Washington. Because I remember the first three point guards he beat were Darren Williams was in New Jersey. Then he beat John Wall. Then I forget who was in Utah at the time. And then it was like, okay, here's Kobe Bryant. Now go beat him. And he scores 37 against him. And that led to what we now still know as Linsanity. Yeah.
Can I tell you a random game that sticks out in my mind that we can finish up? Is the I'm looking at the 13-14 game log. Because I was reminded of this on Twitter by someone the other day that they actually won the first game of that year. They beat the Bucks. And then they lost a close game to Chicago. And then they lost a not so close game to Minnesota. They were 1-2. And again, remember the expectations for 13-14 is like the team had just won 54 games. Like, whatever. They got Bargnani. Wasn't an ideal offseason, but people still expected, like, all right, they're going to be in the playoffs. And then the next game, the fourth game of that season, was against Charlotte. And Charlotte was not good. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, great. We're going to get back on track. Oh, no, I'm sorry. And you know how I know this? It wasn't even the Hornets yet. It was the Bobcats.
Bobcats, yeah.
The Charlotte Bobcats. And I remember sitting and watching that game. It was one of the first games I ever watched, I think, with my wife. First regular season games I ever watched with my wife, because we had watched the previous playoffs. And they lost that game by 5 points. And the Charlotte ended up being pretty good that year. But I remember at that time, because like they had not been great, I think, the previous season. So that's a weird game. Yeah, they were 21-61 the previous season.
Was that the year after the strike shortened, or the shortened season, the 66 game season, where they went 7-59?
Yes, because that season was. Yeah, I think it may have been 2 years after, because yeah, so
they went 21-61 after because they drafted Kid Gilchrist.
Oh, you know, you're right. 11-12, 7-59. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the year after that, 21 wins. And then the year after that was when they finally turned it around. So
look how far we've come, Chip. Look how far the whole middle of this decade now never happened. We're now worrying about playoff seeding in 2021.
Can I nominate another 13-14 game? The one where J.R. Smith hit 10 threes against the Heat, even though they lost in April 6th.
Oh, then it can't. Then I it's nominated, but it lost the Oscar. Okay.
They lost the game, but I remember going crazy because J.R. had a huge game. It was fantastic.
He's like J.R. prototype. Okay.
It was
an April game.
It was an April game. They lost, and it was the 13-14 season. It was the end of the year. We had nothing to cheer about. Remember?
Well, no, because don't forget, they were one of the best teams in the league, net rating and record wise, over the last 20 games.
They were 33-45 after they lost that game. No, because this was in April.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it's because they ended up missing the playoffs, I know, by one game that mm-hmm. season. I'm actually going to look up and see.
I got it for you. Last 20 games, there were 16-4.
Is yeah. And I'm trying to find the game that you're talking about. I think I may have just found it, but yeah, no, I think,
They lost 102-91 and J.R. Smith went 10 of 22 from three.
Yeah.
It's insane. What day was that?
This is, April 6th, 2014.
That was their last loss of the season. Then yes. I remember that because coming down the stretch around that time, like right before that game, it was like, okay, if they win out, they are going to be able to make the playoffs. And then it sticks out to me because there was, even though they won their last four games, there was like a lack of suspense around it because they were just, it was too much ground to make up. And I think that Miami loss was kind of viewed as the nail in the coffin. So that's a good call, Chip.
Poor Melo, 4 of 17. God. Yeah,
there's your no yes of Fournier right there. Is the Melo 4 of 17 games.
4 of 17.
Yeah.
And now he's a Laker.
Yeah. Fits right in with all those guys.
Get your ring. 2000s. Get your ring, Melo.
He ain't getting a ring on that. He's not getting a ring on that.
Will they even get home court in the first rounds, Chip?
I don't know. Will Russell Westbrook move when he doesn't have the ball? We'll see.
Shocker. Yeah. Shocker that Russell Westbrook is still Russell Westbrook, even when he's on the Lakers.
Who would have thunk it? Okay. This was great. This is why I love having you on, because we just talk basketball. And it's the easiest conversation I ever have. Chip, can you just do me a favor and remind the fine folks at home where they can find more of you and your stuff?
Thank you. Yes. I'm on Twitter at ChipMurphy7 and follow me I'm on Knicks Fan TV and my newsletter is called The Couch Critic. Please follow that. Subscribe. And I write about the Knicks, obviously, and I'm writing about the NBA. I got something coming, hopefully, about Ben Simmons soon. And about TV, too. I have something about Squid Game I'm working on, too. Mm.
Andrew, you'll be proud of me because Andrew knows I don't watch any TV. I don't know what it was. I had finished up a newsletter. Dolores was sleeping and I'm like, my brain was just like, I can't, I have a half hour in me. And I put on Squid Game. I have to say,
nice.
I was pretty entertained. I watched most, I think maybe I lasted more than that. I think maybe I watched most of the first episode. It was pretty good.
Most popular show in Netflix history. It is a revolution what Squid Game became. Yes. The most popular show. More than Stranger Things, more than House of Cards. Now there might be like the non-Netflix thing, IP, like The Office and Friends and stuff like that, or Seinfeld now. But as far as Netflix original content, Squid Game's the number one ever watched.
I want to keep watching. I don't feel like I need to keep watching.
Well, I'm a little disappointed, to be honest, because did you finish Ted Lasso?
No, but I'm continuing. I've continued to.
Okay.
I watched it. I think since we last spoke about it, I've watched another episode or two. I think I'm almost done with season one.
I almost want to make you cover your ears. No, I won't. Everybody knows how I feel. Everybody knows from my tweet how I feel about a certain character on that show. And Chip, you share that same sentiment.
I feel the same way. Oh, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Oh my God. When I saw the thing that I can't say because of John, when I saw the thing on his desk, oh my God. I almost threw my remote.
Now I can't wait. The thing on his desk. What is the thing on his desk?
You'll see when you get to it, you're going to text me like, oh, fuck this guy. And then you'll be like, oh, yeah, I get it, Claudio.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I'm excited.
Oh, what a jerk. Seriously.
I have homework to do. All right. Seriously, everybody listening, if you're not following Chip, you're missing out. He's a great follow and he's a great read. He's a great listen. You do awesome work in everything you do. And we always love having you on, obviously. So thank you. And let's have a good Knicks Magic matchup. Couple of matchups. So much fun
for the Knicks, played. Though.
Yeah, let's hope so. All right. That was a lot of fun. Thank you for checking out this episode of the Knicks Film School podcast with Chip Murphy. And again, go follow Chip. He's really good at what he does. He's a good follow and he writes a lot of great stuff and he's just a great guy. So if you're in the business of helping support people who are good people and do good work, go support Chip Murphy. As far as what we have coming up, there will, of course, be post-game live streams after both of the next two games, both of which are against the aforementioned Orlando Magic. So make sure you either check us out live on the Knicks Film School YouTube channel for both of those, or check out what we have on the podcast feed when we will go ahead and turn those episodes around. And then me and Jeremy will be here to talk a little Knicks basketball in our usual episode dropping on midnight on Monday. I think that's it. If you like the show, leave a review, give us a rating, tell your friends, subscribe, all the good stuff. We appreciate it. And we will be back with more fun and games very soon.